Hello, my friend. Welcome to the Deeper Daily Podcast. For the fifth day of September, I'm your host, Paul White. Thanks for joining me today in Genesis chapter 4. There's a few things that we want to get into in the Cain and Abel offering, and there's actually some good deep theological material coming up in regards to faith and blood and sacrifice and some things that the New Testament picks up on. And I will get into that this week as we slowly work through some of these ideas about Cain and Abel. And I say ideas because that's really all that we have is what we think this might be saying. What is the idea being portrayed here? Not trying to land on the end-all answer is to say, this is how you're supposed to interpret this. That's not the goal. We're not using Scripture to shut down conversation. In fact, we should probably be using Scripture to start it. I read Rachel Held Evans said, our Jewish brothers use Scriptures to start conversations. Christians tend to use Scriptures to stop them. And I think what she meant by that is that we tend to quote Scriptures thinking this will solve the argument, whereas our Jewish brothers quote Scriptures so they can all ask a different question. You can bring five people to the discussion, they'll bring five questions about the same text. Christians look at that as disunity. We look at that as one person is right and four people are wrong. I don't know that that's the best way to proceed when you're reading a book about that's populated with story and allegory and metaphor and instruction and prophecy and psalm and lamentation and biography and history and apocalyptic narratives, all of these things wrapped up into one big collection of books, a compendium of sorts. And to try and land on the answer isn't always maybe the best approach. With that said, it is important to look at the Scriptures as doorways into the thought processes of the people that write it, the people that read it, and then those who came later and who wrote other things. Today is a good for instance in that respect. In Genesis chapter 4, verse 3, in the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of the Lord, or an offering of the fruit of the ground to the Lord. But that is not what that text says in the Hebrew. It does not say in the process of time that it came to pass Cain brought. It literally says, and at the end of days, it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of the fruit of the ground. Now, when we translate, we're translating from an ancient language to the language we speak. But this is why translations are difficult. We bring everything we are to the table when we translate. So we take words and settings and places and times, and whether we realize we're doing it or not, we put our own interpretation into what those things can and cannot mean into the translation. So if you come to translate a text and you have an idea that the end of days, end of the earth, last days are global prophecies that are in your future, then when you stumble across a Genesis 4:3 that says in the Hebrew, at the end of days, Cain brought an offering of the fruit of the ground of the Lord, your interpretation is end of days is in my future, not in my past. And if this already happened to Cain, it could not be at the end of days, because my understanding of end of days has to do with things on a global scale. And therefore, the translation ends up with, in the process of time it came to pass. A phrase that doesn't mean at the end of days. So you go, well, why do we do that? I think we do that because we bring that certain preconceived set of ideas to bear. For instance, end of days in other scriptures, we assume to be often, and I use that we pronoun loosely because I don't really feel myself in there, but I'm going to use it anyway. We assume those end of days to be prophetic of things in our future, their future and our future. And the Cain narrative doesn't make any sense as an end of day scenario. Now, this is the first time in the Bible that the phrase end of days appears. So this should actually set the precedent for how we see the phrase end of days in the Bible. And based upon the context of the Cain and Abel story, it would seem that at the end of some period of time, at the end of an epoch, at the end of an era, Cain and Abel are bringing their sacrifice. Is it the end of their father's life? Are we getting a look into the future? I mean, Eve's going to have another son at the end of the chapter, but that doesn't mean these events can't be happening simultaneous. What is the end of an era? We don't know. The text doesn't tell us. The translators didn't even give us a chance to land there because they just said in the process of time. But I think probably more accurate is at the last of it, at the end of an era, at the end of an age. And then if we keep that as our focus on how this is translated there, maybe that influences how it should be translated elsewhere, so that when our New Testament writers say things like end of the age, end of the world, they no more mean the end of the planet than Genesis chapter 4 verse 3 meant end of the planet. They just meant the end of something that has been before but won't be again. And that's how the Cain and Abel story should be interpreted in regards to this text, and maybe how the rest of it should be interpreted as well. So whatever we are at the end of, a sacrifice is going to be offered. And that also sets a precedent for how sacrifices are offered in the Bible, because to this point, we haven't had a sacrifice. But the sacrifice comes at the end of something. It comes at the end of our sanity. It comes at the end of our sin. It comes at the end of ourself. It comes at the end of an era. It comes in our own personal last days. So I've started sort of answering different. When people go, do you think these are the last days? I've started saying, well, they're the last days of something. Are they the last days of the world? No. But they might be the last days of the world as you know it. And hopefully, if we're resting in His finished work, they're the last days of the way you used to live. Because that's an optimistic view of the future. The sacrifice is a transition point. So sacrifice in the Old Testament comes on the heels of the first last days statement. Because sacrifice always marks the last days of something. Even if it's just the animal that's being sacrificed. But that has a greater connotation as well. Maybe sacrifice is the end of the sin that you had, the end of the old you. In the New Testament, that's definitely part what it means, because the old us passed away. We start to look at these individual sacrifices and God's acceptance or denial of them and what that means in a New Testament sense this week as we roll deeper into Genesis 4. I'll see you tomorrow. God bless.